system. Thank you. Good evening, my friends. My name is Eddie. I'm an alcoholic. And by the grace of God, I'm happy to be here. And I'm grateful to Alcoholic Anonymous. And telling you what it used to be like, what happened, and how it's today. Me, before pick up a drink, I think I was full of ism. Because long time before I drink, I was hiding from the people, I was feeling less from the people, and I had a father, alcoholic, but I don't blame him a bit for my alcoholism. But in the beginning, you know, before I pick up a drink, I was hiding from the people. For example, when I was in school, one day I was grade 3-4, you know, since I said my father was alcoholic and drinking, always bringing his rage home to my mother. And she beat up my mother very badly and she was crying. And then I left for the school all the way to cry to school. And right there I was hiding from the people. I didn't want the people to know what's going on with me or my family. So when I was in the school still crying, one of the kids asked me, "Why are you crying?" Just not to show him what happened. I said, "My mother is dead." I just tell the kid, "My mother is dead." But that news goes to the principal, the teacher, and they come to me, they have sympathy for me, they hug me and say, "Go home now, don't stay at the school today." So I go home and say, "Why did he send you home?" He said, "No, I didn't feel good. And now I'm lying to my parents." And you know, next day I don't want to go to school. So finally my older sister and my mother push me and, you know, all the way to the school. And then the principal see me, my mother raised right there alive, you know. So they beat me up good over there. just to hide, you know, just to hide from the people. Anyhow, when I couldn't finish the school, I didn't like the school. I was doing good, but I, you know, again, I left everything half measures. So I started working in a body shop, and I was learning this skill, and I was always keeping away from my father, you know. Every time the same thing happens at home, and always I promise myself when I grow up, I'll never touch my wife, I'll never touch my children, I don't beat them, I will not drink like him. But guess what? I was worse than him, except the part of beating a woman. You know, I promised myself, and I kept promise to this day, I'm proud of that. And at the age of 12, in the garage, first time I picked my drink with a couple of other kids, you know, working as an apprentice. And I got drunk, and I liked the feelings. I liked the feelings, and for 38 years, I chased alcohol to get that feeling. It never happened. In the beginning, yes, you know, I go out, drink, and then I was younger. But slowly, slowly, I was going down the hill. Till alcohol brought me to my knees, my final days when I had enough, and then I was in the corner of the San Jerome jail. Anyhow, at the age of 12, I got drunk and I liked it, and then I continued by myself drinking every weekend, you know, going out, getting my money and going drinking, and I liked it. Slowly, you know, I bring a little bottle of, by then beer, you know, garage. At lunchtime, I drink it, and while the bosses are out over there, you know, I learned by myself in the parking lot of the garage how to drive a car. And one day I had the drink and I said I drive good, so I would check outside, to drive outside. I'm driving in the streets, 12 years old, no license, nothing. And I'm honking the horn, you know, to get attention of the people. But I didn't get anybody's attention except the cops. So the cops started chasing me, they got me and cornered me and make them sweat, you know, I'm running away from them. They beat me up with 3 of them. You know, they started beating me up. But over there, you know, it's different a lot. They don't take you to court for drunk driving or driving without license. Right there they punish you, except you do an act, a big criminal action. Anyhow, they beat me up. From that day on, I got resentment against law enforcement. I kept that resentment until I came to AA. And then when I did my step 4 or 5, you know, I let everything go. And the second time I got drunk, I was age of 15, 16, and me, like, feeling less than others, and you know, I couldn't even talk to a girl. I don't even can get close to a girl to talk to. So I had no girlfriend, nothing, but now I'm growing on the top of the alcohol. Now I need a woman, because I'm growing, you know. So I decided to go to a bar north of the city to get drunk, and I see the bar woman over there. My intention was to pick up a woman from that bar. So I still no driving license and drunk. I showed up I put nice dress. I go to that bar, sitting and drinking. I see one woman in the corner is blinking white to me, and I see she's very sexy, big breasts and tight jeans, you know. Right there I lost my heart to her, you know. And it's just 16, you know, I got more drink and then got more courageous, would talk to her, you know, slowly. And she was drinking small shots, you know. I never had that drink before. My main drink was vodka or beer. And I said, "What are you drinking?" She says, "Scotch. Can you get me one?" She said, "Sure." I got her 1, 2, 3. She goes up and up. And then I'm paying, you know. And I'm happy. I don't care. I have the money. And, you know, so I'm going to get her drunk and do whatever I want with her, you know. So, anyhow, finally, you know, I agreed to go to her place. I'm driving to her place. Suddenly, I don't know what happened. Bang, a truck came in front of me, and then I wake up in the hospital next day. I was full of stitches on my face, you know, but I don't know, either blackout or something. And you know, I look around, I see the next patient to my left side. I look at her, you know, her face is familiar. First of all, the woman, and what is doing in man's section. I look at her, that is the woman that last night, beautiful woman that I lost my heart to. But now she looks like a monkey, you know. The makeup is gone, you know, the hair is all mixed up, and then the blue gown they gave her, wearing, I look at her legs, she has a lot of hair on the legs, you know. So finally, I see the nurses are laughing at me, the cops are there to make reports, laughing at me. So what they're laughing? To make the long story short, that guy is a guy, not a woman. And I was drunk and I picked the wrong person. Anyhow, but the cop, you know, laughed and said, "Poor guy, last night he was this fish, because he, you know, this guy, he does that to many people and then he gets caught, or sometimes don't get caught and rob them." Anyhow, I was embarrassing, you know, for the first time, that was my first date, you know. And always I had to remember, they say, "You remember your first date," you know. It still comes to my head. Anyhow, as the days go by on again, I keep drinking, and now, but it's getting more, you know, I get more drink every night, now it's 2, 3 beers, and then I switch to vodka. From that night on, I added a scotch on the top of my drinks. So it was time to go to army. I was to go to army, 19 years old, and my sisters, my mother, and all, they're pushing me to go to army. Because in Iran, they say when you go to army, it's mandatory there to serve army 2 years. You come out like a man, you know. You get discipline, you get responsibility. They were happy to push me to go to army. So I registered, and they sent me to Iranian borders and Afghanistan. And then 4 months training after, you know, they keep me there on the border. Border patrol. So my commander, you know, he was going through my files, and he saw I was Christian. He said, "You're Christian?" I said, "Yeah, because Muslim is a 99% Muslim country. Okay, maybe 2-3% people over there are different religion." And he was happy, you know. I said, "I like Christian people, I like Armenians, you know. You are my man," you know. He said, "Why is he saying these things?" But after I find out the poor guy is alcoholic, you know. The guy needs drink, but he's a Muslim. The Muslims cannot have a permit for alcohol or go get alcohol easily. So, but Christians easy. So he made me his alcohol provider, you know. So he put me on ambulance since I had driving license. He sends me to capital of Iran, which is about 990 kilometers every 1 month, you know. But he has to have the right reason why he's sending me there with the ambulance. Every time he goes for an excuse, send me to hospital, central hospital, or go bring things, you know, with the ambulance. But one time he sent me to a mission again. He gave me the envelope, all sealed, and then he said, you go to number one hospital of the capital, give it to this doctor. So I go with the seal, leather, everything, and said, don't forget, bring me a gallon of vodka. Huh? I said, sure, I bring you. Every time I go back, I bring him 20 liters of vodka. In the gas, 20 liters tank. So, but, you know, he's scratching my back, and because I don't stay far, me. I don't like to go all the way, wake up early in the morning. He lets me go to his house, eat in his house, you know. They're taking care of me. I was just like vacation for me over there, not serving army. Anyhow, now I go with the steel ladder to the hospital, and then I go to see so-and-so doctor, and what's going on, and then he opens up and says, okay, you come back tomorrow morning. Don't forget to take shower and shave your private part. He says, what? He says, you shave your private part because you asked for circumcision. He says, what? He says, yeah, it's written, they send you here to get circumcised. Said, I didn't ask for it, you know, but anyhow, it was there and they didn't want to put him down. I said, okay, no problem. I came back, 19 years old, they put me in an operation table, they circumcised me. It was so embarrassing, you know. And just to cover him, I sacrificed, you know. So not to say that it's a lie, you send me for alcohol, you know. Anyhow, I finished, the army finished, if I came back, discipline, no, more, less. I then keep drinking until, again, my older sister was now controlling the house, everything, and she was the boss of the house, and she decided, you know, I said, I'm going to find you a good girl, and you're going to get married, you get discipline, you know. I get married, I get discipline. I mean, for marriage, even I didn't know the meaning of marriage. I said, okay, I get married. So they introduced me to a neighborhood girl and said, this is nice girl, blah, blah. Okay, we got married. But I was the first one who was drunk in my own wedding, more drunk than others. Yeah, I didn't learn from that. My first child was born, I showed up in hospital drunk. Second one, I showed up in hospital drunk. Anyhow, but this time Iranian revolution started and it was going like hell, you know. I see a lot of killings there every day, and then they closed all the liquor stores, movies, everything was illegal over there by Muslim law. I mean, I said that. Not a good place to stay. I'm gonna go. I'm immigrate to the West. So I got my daughter. My daughter was 2 years old, and my wife. And then, by American embassy was closed in Iran because they did the revolution first against Americans. You know. So we immigrated. We came to Greece to get visa to go to United States. But over there, while we were there, Iranians took Americans hostage in the embassy. So. And as soon as they see Iranian passport, they kick us out from the embassy. And I was in Greece, no money, and my money is finished. I have a wife who doesn't know any English or French, and little kid, and running out of money. I can't go back, because if I go back, I don't know what happens. Finally, you know, one of my friends said, well, let's go to Canadian embassy. Let's see, they'll try to go to Canada. So we came to Canadian embassy, they applied for immigration, they check out, after 6 months, you know, they said, it's okay, you can go. You're accepted in Quebec. But when I heard Quebec, I said, why Quebec? But I don't know what Quebec is. I don't know where New Brunswick is. I don't know where, you know, British Columbia is. I don't know where, I just know Canada is a cold country, that's all. And I said, why you send us to Quebec? I'm arguing with them. And I don't know why, what's the difference between Quebec or British Columbia? Just in my head, and I look back at my wife, I said, do you tell them I'm drinking? She said, no. I said, why do they send us to Quebec? Because I heard, you know, Quebec is a cold, Canada is a cold country, and they're sending me. Oh, I heard there was a lot of bears, and, you know, up north there, and I said, Quebec is maybe there. They want to send us to the bear, to the where the bears live, grizzlies live, so I can't get any, no civilization, and no, I can't get alcohol. That was the way I was thinking. Anyhow, explain the counselor to Quebec because he don't know French. Quebec is a French province, and in the beginning, yeah, have difficulty to learn French, that's all. Anyhow, we came here with no money. I had $700 US in my pocket when we came here. But I started working hard, and no problem to work. You know, as soon as my profession was very easy to find and good pay, 3 days I stayed in Canada without work. I'm still working. 3 days I had no work. And it was Christmas, because when we arrived, so 1980. After I started working, but since I was working, I was trying to control my way of drinking. Because we had no money in a different country. I was the only worker here, so at home. So slowly things was getting better, and I was making more money, and I was controlling my drinking and just doing weekends. But slowly, when I saw more money and everything was getting better, so weekends came, and the night I got the check after the weekend, and then Monday, and then I don't show up to work, and I changed a lot of work from that day on. Because they simply get rid of me, because I just call and lie. Because I have hangover, I can't go, my back hurts, this happened, my wife this, my child this. You know, and they knew I was lying. And more I drank, more liar I became, more manipulator I came. So, finally, the first time I was caught drunk driving. And I was drunk. And then I lost my driving license for the first time 1 year. But me, I didn't care, you know, I still kept drinking, and now this time drinking and driving without license. I did that, you know, but slowly now I was afraid to drink and, you know, get caught again. This time I didn't want to go to jail because if I did. But anyhow, it happened. It happened the second time I got caught and with no license. And the judge sentenced me to 3 days in the weekend in Bordeaux. And second time, you know, I spent 3 days there in Bordeaux. But when I came out 3 days after, you know, it's just like that. Nothing happened, you know. Now I'm hiding my drinking because I see wherever I work, you know, and I'm lying to them, I hide everywhere. No, I can't hide more because I hide at home. My wife and children find my drinking and they destroy it in the sink. Now in the midnight I wake up, I'm shaking. Now I'm shaking badly and I can't control it. I need drink, but there is no drink. I turn the house upside down. I can't find it because they destroy it. So one day I was working in the garage and I was thinking where to hide so they can't find it. I was thinking on the car, you know. Suddenly the windshield washer tank of the car caught my eye. So instead of windshield washer, I can put scotch in it and get the longer hose, come under the dash, push the button and drink. And nobody knows. So I did that. I keep windshield. I washed it and I filled up 40 ounces of scotch. I got longer nose, hose, and then I'm driving and pushing the button and driving, you know, nothing, nobody. I'm safe. And then And intentionally I go by the cops, you know. I'm driving by them and then pushing the button and drink, and I say, catch me if you can now, you know. I'm proud of myself. Anyhow, they didn't catch me, but I had a couple accidents with that. And first thing, you know, I'm so selfish, you know. One accident was really bad, you know. I hit the car on the side. The passenger seat was on the top of the head of the driver. And I saw it, you know, when I was in the spinning, going the sidewalk. But the first thing I did, came out of the car, I don't check, you go check if the guy is dead or injured or something. I go front of my car, see my windshield washer, tank is broken or not, leaking or not. Anyhow. While I was doing this thing, now I was hiding, and then my wife hides, and she is fed up. My children are fed up with this drinking, and one of my friends, my Iranian friend, you know, said my brother needs a bodyman in Nashville, Tennessee. He has a big dealership there, and he needs somebody like you to work on the frame machine. And he pays good money. Will you go? I said, yes, I will go. And by then I was thinking, my problem was here. If I go there, I stop drinking, I'll be by myself, and I'll get more money, I'll settle everything and come back, and everything is going to go perfect. And before I go, there was a bar in Laval, it's called the Bar Rendezvous. And every night, about four years and a half, every night, on the top of hiding, drinking in the car, before I go home, I had to sit down in that bar and drink with a friend of mine. We just know each other's name in the same table. And that friend of mine last week was the speaker here. Last week he spoke here. In the same table, in the same place, in the same time we are there. And we are worse than each other, you know. And but we like each other. We have the same attitude, everything. So I came to drink with him again. I said, I'm going to Nashville for better work, you know, better money. So he said, so long, I went to Nashville. I went to Nashville. Now this one, second time I had no driving license. Now in Nashville, from my work to the apartment that I live, is about 19 miles. You know, it's not the bus service or metro like here. Easy to go to work, you know. And you have to have a car and drive. But I couldn't drive it. I couldn't drive, but the boss said, this Mexican guy who worked in that body shop, he said, you are on his way. He's going to pick you up and drop you off at night. So while he was doing this, and one day he said, why don't you get license? You know, I said, eh, to be honest with you, I have no driving license. I said, I know you don't have. Well, you can get license here. He said, how can I get license? The computers are linked and I can't get license here. They know I was caught drunk driving. I said, no, I'm telling, I have a Mexican guy, drug dealer, you know, and this guy is expert of changing names and legal good license, you know, some junkies bring and leave their documents with them and with him, and they get drugs, and some of them don't come back, and this guy changed picture and said it. I said, how much? I said, $200. And two pictures, bring you a license, at least you can drive to work and home. Okay, I gave him $200, without thinking, you know. So I gave him $200 and two pictures, and the guy comes after 2-3 days, he comes back with the license, now it's my picture on it. Nobody can say this is fake or something. And the license is legal, but the picture is changed. And I thought, you know, they changed my name too, but I see, the name says Armando Gonzalez. And I'm not Mexican. And I don't know one word of Spanish. And there are a lot of Mexican cops there. One of them just stopped me with a routine, you know. He said, look, he's going to speak Spanish with me, and then I'm busted there, you know. Anyhow, but I keep drinking, but it helped me actually, you know. Because on the way home, I didn't drink. I didn't stop in a bar. I just got the liquor, hide in the trunk, and go home and drink at home. Before to get inside the house, in the parking lot, shaking, you know, I go every night. I finish the bottle. And I was a lone drinker. I didn't want to drink with anybody. I didn't want anybody to tell me you're drinking. And I hated to be called alcoholic. Everybody, you know, actually two men called me alcoholic. I punched them because I hated that name. And actually one of the three people called me alcoholic. One was my mother-in-law, but she was a woman. I couldn't hit her, you know. But I promised I can't, I don't raise my hand on a woman. But while she was here about 3 months from California, 3 months first week she called me alcoholic. I had resentment with her. I kept in my head how to get even with her, but without hitting her, you know. But finally it came to my head, she's afraid of mouse, you know. So I can buy a mouse and put in her bed and make her, she's scared of her. And I got, so I get even with her. So I went to shopping centers to buy a mouse, but after I changed my mind, I see the mouse, they said, she's gonna panic and kill the mouse for my resentment and it's not fair to the animal. I had conscience too. So, but I changed my mind, and then I was coming out of the pet shop. I remember in Provigo they sell the whole lamb, Australian frozen lamb. I go pay $40, I got a lamb, frozen lamb, and put in the balcony milk, and she's out, and before she comes on, I put in her bed, just to scare her. Stupid, you know, sick. Anyhow, finally, you know, in Nashville I worked, and about 2 years, 19 months I worked, and I came back, this is how I came back to recovery. I came back to Montreal. First thing I did, you know, they got rid of me, I know, very politely. And then, don't come back until we call you. There was full of jobs there, but, you know, they didn't want me because I couldn't get the service I could provide for them because I was always drunk or show up at work two, 3 days a week. Anyway, I came back to Montreal, and I went, first thing I did, you know, next day I go to that bar to see my best friend, my best drinking buddy. I went to that bar, I didn't see him. The day after, the week after, every night I go, and we don't know, we just know each other's name, that's all. We don't know each other's address or family name, nothing. I just go to see my drinking buddy, and he's not there. After 2-3 weeks, you know, one day I was walking in the street with two Mickeys in my back pocket and drunk, walking because I still couldn't drive. That Mexican license, I destroyed it before I came here. I still don't have license. I walked from my house to liquor store in Chamonix-Laval, and I passed by his house all the time. I mean, by the bar. And he saw me. He stopped. But as soon as I saw him, I saw the changes in him. This guy has a brand new sport car, and his other car that I saw him is that was old Honda Accord, shit box, never gas inside, gas gauge was always there. One headlight was burned, still was burned, you know, many years, and he didn't change because he spent just like me the money on his booze. Anyhow. But this time I see him as a brand new sport car, and he's changed. His eyes are shining, he's shaved, nice clothes, and you know, he's calling my name. I go sit in his car, say, what happened? I'm looking for you, I don't find you, what's this? Is it 649? He says, no sir, not 649, what's 649? He says, you have a brand new car, you're shining, you are a priest, and he speaks I use the F word, you know. I said, what F happened to you? And then he speaks politely, softly with me. This guy was, every 10 words out of his mouth, 9 was F. Now he says, try not to use that F word in your conversation. So now he's polite. He's polite too. So finally he told me, he goes to AA. I said, what's AA? I don't know what AA is. Says he goes to AA and he's 2 years sober. Since I left, you know, he decided not to drink and he went to stop drinking in AA. I said, what's AA? Says, I tell you AA. You have a drinking problem? I said, no, I have no drinking problem. And I don't know even the meaning of drinking problem. Said, I can drink. You have problem to drink? Said, no. Yeah, I have drinking. I can't stop. But I go to AA, how to stop drinking. Anyway, he gives me a meeting leave and says, are you alcoholic? You think you're alcoholic? I said, no. I said, okay, answer this question. By then it was end of 93, 94. He gave me the meeting list. There was 20 questions. And me, I honestly, he says, answer honestly. I read and mark honestly. I go. And after, at the end, when I read it, says, if you answer 3 or more yes to these questions, you have they have problem with alcohol. But I do, I don't know, 16, 17 was yes. And I say, I'm not alcoholic. So anyway, he said, I'll take you to AA meeting, you know, you will find out more, you know. You will listen to this speaker and identify. And there are many, many, many people just like you, just like me, are there. I said, okay, he brings me to Saturday Night Laval, which is my home group now. And so he said, sit down. At me, I say, talk, and they shake hands, you know, to people, they laugh. I'm not the one of them, you know. I'm not one of them. What are you doing? This is a cult or something. Well, actually, honestly, some, they hold hands, you know, I say, they're gays, you know, gays. I'm not a gay. And you said, you stop drinking, and AA, this is gay people, you know, they hold hands, man to man, you know. You know, I was sick, you know. I was judging the people. I didn't know what is going on. First day I'm judging the people. Anyhow, he didn't give up with me. He bearing me to more meetings, and then finally I was not getting better. I just go in there to judge the people or to show up drunk at the end. And just before the meeting starts, I show up, you know, drunk and run away before the seventh tradition or after seventh tradition. I don't stay for prayers because for me God was, you know, punishing God. Why do I have to pray to God who punishes me all? Because all through the years I drink, I said, this is God doing these things to me. I was blaming God. I was looking at the sky, spitting on him, cursing him, you know. Because all these things that happens to me is because of God. But it was not, I find loving God, caring God here. And then I was in prison, I came on my knees, I asked His help, you know. Right there, that night, I felt the difference. Next day I wake up, you know, I was serene. And He brought me to AA after I tell you how I came back seriously, with willingness. Anyhow, I went to the meetings and so He said, you need more help, you know. Poor guy goes after, registers me, and after my papers, everything, talks to Beaver. He puts me in Beaver. I stay 5 weeks in Beaver. But over there, I slowly got small things, you know, not really. I didn't give myself completely. But I was always, I thought, you know, I could come out from there, you know, control drinking. But me, I'm alcoholic. As soon as I touch the first drink, I don't know the end. The end for me is jail. Mental institution or, you know, 6 weeks underground. Anyhow, if my case is like that, I'm sure. Anyhow, after I did it, I came out and he got me more involved. And I said, make coffee and set up, you know, greet the people. I was not honest, you know, I was angry. I'm 9 months sober, but still angry. And I go make coffee, and he says, he comes in, I'm first one, open the door, make coffee, and then sitting there, he says, why are you sitting here? What do I make? Coffee is made. So go greet the people. But no, he just, the coffee is ready, he wants to drink, and this guy is selfish, he was better when he was drinking with me. He sends me in the snow to greet the people, but me, I was angry. As soon as the people come in, you know, I greet, one day at a time, you're welcome. I'm just pretending, you know. And my name is Eddie, you're welcome. And as soon as they go in, I do part of the party. You many couple times I showed up drunk, but this guy doesn't leave me alone. He didn't leave me alone until one day, you know. Now I got my driving license back. I had my license back, and now I was 9 months sober, and they gave me my chip, 9 months sober, but you know, still you know, thinking of drinking is in my head. You know, I got my 9 months chip and I said, I'm gonna try one bottle of beer tonight, you know. But not a strong one, you know. I'm start with 1.5 C, the difference, if I can control. So I go, but I'm in Laval, but you know, if I drink in Laval, you know, those people that come out of the meeting or the people know me, they're gonna see I'm not honest, you know. So I drive all the way to downtown to drink a bottle of 0.5. So I go and drink in just right in the corner at Water and Forum, that was here. And Forum, I drink 0.5 and nothing happened, you know. But I asked for, you know, one brother. Brother came to brother, you know. I said, I don't like beer, you know. It's not that spice. Anyhow, I have a drink. Anyhow, I go have a scotch. I go St. Catherine, I'm walking all the way. Now I park my car in around here, and then it's winter, I'm walking. I walk bar to bar, all the way to Saint Laurent. And the other way, I'm drinking, coming back. And I had $400 money on me. I'm pissed drunk, and I don't know where my car is parked. Mm-hmm. I'm looking and, you know, I'm trying to think where I parked my car, I don't know. So anyhow, 2-3 hours I spend, I find my car, and I see the key is inside. I was so rushing to go to the ring, I left the key and locked the doors. So in the winter, imagine, I find a brake, and they broke my window, you know, the driver. Not even thinking to break another window, because you know, driving all the way to Laval, the wind is coming with the snow. So I broke my window, I got inside the car, but now I don't know where I'm going. I'm driving, you know, instead of going 20 west and go to Laval, I take 20 east and going toward Quebec City. I drive and drive and drive. Where is this Laval? I can't find it. Finally, I saw a city with the lights, everything, so that's Laval. And drunk, good. And then I see Dunkin' Donuts. I can't find it. I see it's not Laval. So I said, I ask for help, you know, from the cops. The cops are in the parking lot of Dunkin' Donuts and drinking coffee. I came out of my car, parked next to them, and I'm asking for Laval. As soon as they saw me like that, one, he said, how many drinks did you have? I said, 2 beers. They have only 2 beers. And now, out of $400 money in my pocket, I had around $80, and I said, 2 beers. And he said, you're driving this car? I said, yeah. So you're lucky you came out and you asked for address. If you were behind the wheel, I could arrest you. You have money on you? I said, yeah. So there's a motel there. Go rent a room, sleep at night, and sober up. Tomorrow morning, you will see where Laval is. By the way, here is Saint Hyacinth. I was in Saint Hyacinth and looking for my house in Laval. Yeah. Anyhow. But the other cop didn't let me drive. He got the key from me. And the other cop drove me, and the other cop drove my car to the motel. They made sure I paid and go upstairs drink to sleep. It was like that, you know. Anyhow, after that, you know, when I came out of jail, and this time I was involved in a very, very big accident that I said before, and it was my fourth time offense. Because third time I was drunk drive again, and again I spent about 4 days in Bordeaux. But this time, you know, I was drunk, and I had a very big major accident, and the cops arrested me right on the spot, and they sent me to the judge in Laval. And so the Crown is fighting for me to put me in jail, but my, you know, legal aid, but then I don't work, I have nothing, I was on welfare and drinking, driving, and spending all the money, even the welfare money, you know, I was so selfish, the welfare money I was spending on my drinks, I didn't care first, you know, to give money to my family. And yeah, I got my legal lawyer, they were fighting for me. Finally, the judge decided, you know, give you a chance to go to 6 months meeting. 6 months you have to go to AA meetings, 4 meetings a week, and you come up with signature of the chairperson to your probation officer. And I did that. I did it for 2 months, not more. But after 2 months, you know, I blew it, and, you know, they arrested me at my home, and so they take me to the same judge. He said that you don't deserve freedom, you don't deserve to be held, so you learn your lesson to go to jail. So he said, he sent me to San Jerome for 4 months. And it was right there. And when they arrested me at home, you know, I had nothing on me, because usually when I go home, I put everything on the mirror, you know, next to the bed, and even my money from my keys. And this time, you know, I went home, and they came arresting me in the front, I just fast put everything on. I didn't take anything with me. And anyhow, they sent me to jail, and then over there was a really time that I hit my bottom. First of all, I made a fight. I made a fight with 6 people there, and the 6 people for 4 months was trying, you know, to kill me there, you know. Every day they give me something, you know, give me a hard time, and I was fed up. And the beginning of it, 2-3 weeks I was there, you know, I'm sleeping with my clothes on, my shoes on, because I was afraid of these guys. Finally, that night, but I came, I don't know how I came to my knees, I asked God, you know, I said, if you exist, please help me. I can't continue this anymore, and I promise I'll do anything it's supposed to be done. I go to any length. And when I finished my prayer, I said, you know, before that night, I slept good, I didn't care, I was not afraid, I don't know what happened, he knows that. And next day, I just, unintentionally, I put my hand in my back pocket here. I see the chapter 5 of the big book was folded in my back pocket. I put it there. I didn't know about it. And this is it. And I don't call it, you know, coaccident. I said it was God working with me. So I started working about 3.5 months, how it was, reading it, identifying, reading, thinking about it, praying, looking at the steps and understanding. And when I came out of jail, the first who picked me up, the guy who spoke here last week, he's my sponsor. He picked me up, and this time, you know, I told him I go to any. He got me again involved in service. I got involved in any service. I did everything in AA except going to DCM and GSR. I did, you know, helpline. I did, and I got sponsors, I, you know, spoke here, there, you know. He's in service, so he got me in service too. I'm still doing it. I'm still working with him. And today, before I hated to face one, or I couldn't even talk to someone. Today, I have thousands phone numbers of all AA members. They are my best friends. From that day on, I don't miss one meeting a night. Every night I go to meeting. Every night I learn. I go speaker meetings because I learn more from you people. I learn many things. I changed my life. My family, I made my amends to them because they were most of them I hurt, mostly badly I hurt them. And today they're proud of me. And they say anonymity when somebody calls me. Ask for me, my family don't care, because they tell the people, you know, he's in AA meeting. They don't care. So before they were afraid of AA. No, today I know I have this disease and I need help, and my help is here. And this big book I read, and it worked for me. If it, work for me, for a person like me, if you heard anything I said, if it works for me, it works for anybody. And if somebody is new, this is the answer. And thank you very much. Thank you, Karen, for asking.